Hi everyone, welcome to season 2, episode 34 of Sisters Coffee and Crime. I'm Sandra.
And I'm Christina. Today we're talking about the Wells Gray Provincial Park murders. In August of 1982, a family of six was murdered while they were camping. David Shearing committed this horrible mass murder. Let's grab some coffee and talk about this crime.
Wells Gray Provincial Park is located in East Central British Columbia. It's the fourth largest park in BC. It was established in 1939. It's mostly isolated and it's 5 hours away from Vancouver. This beautiful place is the scene of a brutal crime. In 1982, an entire family was murdered there. On August 2nd, 1982, Bob and Jackie Johnston took their kids, Janet, who was 13, and Karen, who was 11, to go on a family camping trip. They went to Wells Gray Provincial Park. They meet up with Jackie's parents, George and Edith Bentley. Now, George and Edith were traveling around the province, and then they met up with the others for this family trip. This trip was just supposed to be some family bonding, was supposed to be a fun, relaxing family togetherness trip. Mm-hmm. But at some point, everything goes terribly wrong. Now, it's supposed to be a two-week trip.
Wow, that's a long time to go camping.
Right.
Yeah.
In 1981. No cell phone, no nothing. You're really disconnected from everybody.
Yeah.
So when Bob Johnston doesn't show up for work on August 16th, everyone starts to get a little bit worried.
Of course.
And at first they think maybe he's running late or maybe he had car trouble. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's no way to get a hold of him. No cell phone. And by late afternoon, when Bob doesn't make contact with anyone, they believe that something bad must have happened because it's so out of character for him.
Right.
So they start calling around and they soon realize that no one's talking to or spoken to anyone from the group. On August 23rd, a missing persons report is filed.
How many days after is that?
He didn't show up for work on August 16th.
Okay.
So it's a few days. I feel like it was a long time.
But I guess we don't know how long it would take them to kind of call, right? Like, call and kind of check mark that they've checked all these places because now it would be a lot, I think, easier to do that.
Absolutely. You call everybody's cell phone.
Yeah, like right? at once, like a mass text where it might have taken a bit of time then. So in the next few days,
the RCMP, along with family and friends and locals from Clearwater, decide to search Wells Gray Provincial Park looking for the missing people. Mm-hmm. But nothing's found.
Right.
Now, on September 12th, 1982, the RCMP do get a tip. There is an abandoned car in the woods. Now, they find a burnt 1979 Plymouth, and the license plate confirms that this is the Johnston family car. Inside the car, they find human remains. No. They're in the back seat, and counting the bones and bagging everything out of the car, the police and forensic pathologists realize that they have the skulls of four adults. They had to open the trunk with a tire iron, and there they find the remains of two young people. Dental impressions will confirm that they have found the remains of the Johnston and Bentley family. Now, police begin to search from where the car was found out, and they're trying to find anything, any more clues that will lead them into the direction of a suspect.
Right.
Now, they find a freshly cut tree near the path of the road as if someone was trying to, like, clear a path to put the car there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So they didn't want to leave the car there. That's the...
They found a spot that was, like, covered in brush.
Right.
And then they try to clear the area to make it there. And they also find an axe head in the car. They place the car. It was, like, hidden from sight. Like, you wouldn't have seen it normally. I'm going to post pictures. But from where people would walk by normally, you wouldn't have been able to see it.
Gotcha.
Also, the way that the bodies were found, they were, like, so close together. It was as if they were sort of on top of each other.
Oh,
yeah, so it tells police that they most likely were killed somewhere else and then put there.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Now, when the skulls are examined, that they do find that one of them has a wound similar to a bullet. They open up the skull and a bullet casing is found, and it matches a .22 caliber gun.
Okay.
George and Edith Bentley were also traveling around the province because they met up with the rest of the family, right?
Uh-huh.
And noticeably missing is the 1981 Ford truck and camper.
Okay, that belonged to...
The grandparents. They, like, had just bought it, and they were going out, like, traveling, because it's...
Right, they're retired or whatever, and...
Right. So, police believe that finding this car and camper is going to lead them to the killer.
Right,
because they believe that he took it.
Mm-hmm.
Or more than one person. I don't know what they're thinking at this time. But... They're starting to get a little bit worried because the trail's going a little bit cold.
Right.
It's been a little over a month since the murders happened at this point. Now, the investigation is completely focused on finding that missing truck. And the RCMP officers split up the park into, like, quadrants, and they search it.
Okay.
They even have, like, planes going above the area to survey it. And the local police start going door-to-door talking to literally everybody. They try to get... some information from somebody, like maybe someone knows something, but they don't even know it.
Something.
Exactly.
Or, yeah.
Now, they do find some information from a park employee. He remembers seeing a parker similar to the one driven by the Bentleys in a place called the Bear Creek Campsite.
Okay.
Which, from what I understand, the Bear Creek Campsite isn't actually in Wells Gray Park. It's like a few miles away. Like, it's not officially a part of that park.
Okay. But is it like something, do trails lead up to that area? Or?
I think so, but I'm not 100%
sure
on that. Yeah. But like they say, you know, the Bear Creek campsite was a remote area, and Wells Gray Park, where the car was found, was a remote. The amount of times I heard remote area,
right.
It's like a remote area and a remote area and a remote area.
Okay.
It's crazy. Now, near the fire pit, they locate a working pot that looks like one that the police saw in family pictures.
Oh, okay.
And they also find beer by the creek, and that's the same beer that Bob Johnson drank. Now, the campsite looked as if the family, specifically the Johnsons and the Bentley family, had been there. And while at the campgrounds, officers find a shell casing belonging to a .22 caliber gun.
Mm-hmm.
So this leads them to find five more shell casings.
Okay.
All from the .22 caliber. And this confirms that their suspicion that they were murdered there and then taken somewhere else.
Right.
Now, the information about the bullet casings and the bodies being moved were held back from the media.
Okay. So they need to keep something to themselves kind of thing, right?
Right. And it's like, it's known as the Wellgrays Park, Provincial Park murders, but the actual murder, I think like where the bodies were found is there, but the actual murder happened somewhere else.
Right.
Now, in the meantime, they get a tip that the missing car was spotted. A man calls in a tip that he followed a truck into a gas station in Saskatchewan.
Oh.
He tells police that two men get out and eat dinner at a diner that's attached to a gas station.
Okay.
The police do follow up on this tip. They go to North Battleford, Saskatchewan, and they find more witnesses that say that they've seen these two men in this truck. The restaurant owner tells police that the two men drove the car. I'm just going to call it a car, not a camper, but
yeah.
I know it's a truck or
something. A camper, something that you use to go.
Right, I'm going to post a picture. It's like, if you see it, you'll know what it is. The restaurant owner says that they were rugged looking men with French accents. And they also tell the police that the men seemed really out of place.
Okay. So obviously they're not locals or anything like that.
No.
Yeah.
The police get a sketch artist to interview the eyewitnesses, and they come up with two drawings. The first drawing looks like a dark-haired man, and basically between all of his beard hair and the hair on his head, it's just a pair of eyes.
Right.
The second is a blonde-haired man, and he has shoulder-length hair.
Mm-hmm.
And it just looks like what you would think like a hippie looks like.
All right. Okay.
Both of these pictures are just two guys with a lot of hair. That's all I can say. And it's circulated to the media as two men in their early 20s with French-Canadian accents.
Okay.
In the next couple of weeks, tips come flooding in about these two men. And it shows that they are traveling east across Canada. Mm-hmm. It goes all the way to the Ontario-Quebec border.
Wow.
By March of 1983, they still cannot catch up to these two unknown men in the camper. And now, like, less and less tips are starting to come in.
Right. Do all the tips, I don't know if you found this out, but do all the tips lead to those two?
Well, it's tips about where people are spotting these men.
Okay.
That's where most of the tips are
coming
from.
So really, that's the only lead that they are following. Okay.
Because they really, feel like if that's the real truck, then those are the murderers.
Right.
Or someone who came in contact with the murderers, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, at this point, the police agree to team up with a documentary group to kind of spark interest in the community.
Yeah.
And when the documentary comes out, they get a replica of the car and camper, and they put a sign on the side of the camper that says, Johnson and Bentley Family Murders, BC. Have you seen this vehicle?
Oh, okay.
And they basically drive the camper from Saskatchewan to the Ontario-Quebec border, and they stop in specific places where the sightings were supposedly happened. And they try to do like a little media conference to maybe the locals will remember something just from seeing it.
Sure.
By September of that year, police get the lead of what they think is the lead of the entire case. And it comes from Windsor, Ontario. This man says that he painted the camper. There are two men fitting the description of the suspects with French-Canadian accents. And he was paid to paint the camper and also to get rid of a .22 caliber handgun.
Oh.
This mechanic tells police that the pair is headed to Michigan. And this makes the officers contact Detroit police immediately. But then the case kind of takes a weird turn because two forestry workers come across the burnt camper only kilometers from the suspected murder site. Hidden in the brush is the camper belonging to the Bentley family.
Oh, that's weird.
So all those tips were red herrings, and now the police realize that they just wasted an entire year chasing nothing.
You know, that's what I was trying to ask before, was if this is the only kind of lead that they're following.
Yeah.
What about
if it doesn't pan out?
If it doesn't pan out, and now
that
it did
happen.
So now they've wasted so much time.
Right.
And could you imagine that these people, if they were ever kind of approached or even taken
those
in.
Those poor guys, like, yeah. Maybe they're just going across, but still, disposing of a handgun. Unless that guy made the story up, which you never know.
Yeah, I don't know.
On the driver's side of this camper, they find the bullet hole consistent with a .22 caliber gun. And they realize that somebody with knowledge of the area had to have done this. With the way everything was hidden, it makes police suspect that they had to have known this park really well.
Right.
So they decide to kind of start the investigation as if it were day one. They go back to Wells Gray Park and they canvass the area again. And they also go door to door and speak with every single person in Clearwater.
Okay.
At one home, they speak to a couple. And before the officer is about to leave, the wife says to her husband, tell them what David said. And the husband is like, I don't think it's important. Forget it. But the police officer was like, no, tell me what's not important and I'll decide.
Right.
So they tell the police that this man, David, wanted to know how to register a Ford pickup that has a bullet hole in it, or how to repair the door with a bullet hole in it. And this happened about a year ago. And they're all talking about David William Shearing. He was a 23-year-old local resident at the time. And he lived in this area, but after the crime was committed, he moved. And when police first started the investigation and they were going door to door, they actually spoke to David.
Oh.
But he gave them no reason to be suspicious.
Right.
According to the couple, David had a Ford pickup, which is the Bentley pickup with the camper.
Mm-hmm.
And David's Ford had a bullet hole on the side of the door, which was hold back evidence from the crime scene.
Right.
So another tip comes in about David. A few years earlier at a park, there was a hit and run that took place. Okay. And this tipster says that David was the driver in this case.
Okay.
That victim died.
Mm-hmm.
And if this was to be believed, then before the Johnston Bentley murders, David got away with either manslaughter or murder. I don't know.
Sure. I mean, you would have to see if it was done intentionally,
right,
or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
So at this time, David lived in Tumbler Ridge, around 600 kilometers north of Wells Gray Park. In Tumbler Ridge, David was already known to authorities. He was caught stealing tools from some local businesses.
Okay.
So when they get there, they put him under surveillance, and they eventually bring David in for questioning.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, they really need a confession, or their entire case kind of falls apart.
Right.
So they first bring up the hit and run, and they say, like, that's what they're bringing him in for.
Okay.
And David replies, oh, is this all this is about?
Oh,
and he seems kind of relieved. Yeah, which is a huge red flag.
Mm-hmm.
And David does end up confessing to this murder.
Oh.
They talk to David about the Johnson Bentley murders and ask him if he knows about it or about where it happened. And he says, you mean the murders that happened at Bear Creek campsite?
Ah, so that was also the location, right?
Right.
Because it was withheld.
No, it was because we know that it happened at the park, but no one knew that it happened at Bear Creek campsite.
Right.
So now they're thinking, okay, this is good. We definitely have the right guy.
Mm-hmm.
David tells police that on August 10th, he begins to stalk the family.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he kind of set up camp and like stalked them from afar. Mm-hmm. And then on August 10th, he kills the adults, and he keeps the girls alive for about a week, and then he kills them.
Oh, I'm scared to ask, do you know if...
Yes, we know. We're going to get there. It's
right.
It's nothing good, I can tell you that.
Yeah, okay.
On August 16th, 1984, he pleads guilty to 6 counts of murder. He gets sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole for 25 years. That's the max sentence that he could get at the time.
Right.
So I'm going to read you some quotes from that time from his mother, Rose, and from his brother, Greg. So his mother, Rose, was quoted as saying, quote, I hope it's a bad mistake or a bad dream. He was always been such a good boy. He always worked so hard, end quote. His brother, Greg, said, quote, I have a lot of questions I'd like to ask the police, too. I have a hard time believing all this, and I can't say anything right now because it wouldn't be fair to David, end quote.
Okay. I don't know what that means, but okay.
I think that they're just in shock. I don't think that
sure.
You ever can think, like, my brother, my friend, my whoever
right.
can do
yeah,
this.
Yeah, of course. I wouldn't expect them to go, oh, yeah, of course, that makes sense.
Unless he was a piece of shit. And then,
right.
And then they
sure.
can't say it, I guess.
Sure.
So after sentencing, the RCMP Sergeant Mike Eastman interviews David again to get the truth behind the murders. So this is what he tells David, quote, you know why I'm here, David. I think you sexually abused those girls before you killed them. You told me some time ago you would consider telling me the rest of the story after you were sentenced.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm here to collect, David, and I'm not taking no for an answer, end quote.
All right.
Okay, so David actually does end up making a confession, and mm-hmm. he says that he was lusting after the girls.
Oh, that's gross.
He was set on sexually abusing them, and he was willing to kill the entire family
to
do it.
Whoa. Okay.
He goes on to say that he stalked them for a few days with the thoughts of raping the girls, and on August 10th, 1982, he walks to the campsite with his rifle. He shoots Bob Johnson, then Jackie, then George and Edith, and the girls were already in their tents, and David says that he looked inside, told them a dangerous biker gang was around, and that the adults went for help. He tells them to stay put, and this gives him time to put the bodies in the car.
Right.
And he covers them with a blanket. So then David says that he got in the tent with the girls. He tells Eastman that he keeps the girls alive for about a week, and he stayed at his ranch
mm-hmm.
and at a small fishing cabin on Clearwater River. During this time, he repeatedly rapes both girls. Now, they leave the cabin because a prison guard actually shows up. This prison guard is supervising prisoners from a local jail, and they were fishing that day, so basically he just went to all the houses in the area and said, hey, don't be alarmed, but these guys are here.
Right. Okay.
Fishing.
Okay.
And at that time, the girls were hiding behind the door because that's where David put them and told them to be quiet, basically.
Yeah.
Which is heartbreaking because they were so close to a police officer. Or like a guard, I should say.
Well, to help, right?
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
From there, they go to his family farm, and he takes the younger sister, Karen, outside for a walk on August 16th into the woods, and he kills her. And he does the same the next day to Janet. He did the same thing to both girls. He makes them turn around saying, "I have to pee." Mm-hmm. And when they turn around, he shoots them in the back of the head. He then takes their bodies to the Johnson family car and he puts them in the trunk and he burns it. Now, to verify the story a little bit, they did find that police, that prison guard.
Right.
And it turns out that he does remember speaking to them.
Yeah.
And he says that through going like through David's route, that they actually did find on a tree carved JJ, which they believe stands for Janet Johnson.
Oh.
Just so sad. Okay, well, in 2008, David was up for parole, but he never completed his sexual offender treatment. So the board believed that he's still
an option? I'm sorry.
Well, you're supposed to take the treatment as a sexual offender in prison. You're supposed to take
it. So how is he just allowed not to take it?
Oh, that's what you mean.
Yeah.
I guess it's optional. I don't know. But because the board believes that he still has violent sexual fantasies, he was denied. And he's up again in 2012, and it was also rejected. And he actually changes his name from David Shearing to David Ennis, and Ennis is his mom's last name.
Okay.
And he applied again in 2014 because, of course, you get to apply every 2 years. But before that could actually go to the board, it was that application was withdrawn.
Okay.
Now, the Johnson and Bentley family started a petition asking the parole board not to release him and to stop allowing him to apply every 2 years.
Yeah.
They got thousands.
Because every 2 years.
Yeah. It's a lot.
I mean, it's a lot. And that just reopens all of that trauma
right.
that this family has gone through. Awful.
Okay, so I'm gonna try to say this without getting sick, but he did marry a woman in 1995.
Oh, okay.
No, they met in 1993.
Right.
She is from Prince Albert, Saskatchewan, and her name is Heather Ennis. And here is her quote, which makes me cringe and disgusted, but here it goes. "I have seen so much change in this man since we met. I know that this man's heart is in the right place, and I'm just here to back him up," end quote.
You're disgusting.
I'm so disgusted at her. I don't understand. You know that he raped children. How are you okay with this? I know, yeah. Like, he's a murderer, and I'm not saying to get past that, but how can you get past rape? I don't get
right.
it. Rape of children.
Right.
David Shearing, or Ennis, whatever you want to call him, remains in prison. In Alberta. He is currently 61 years old. So that's it. That's the case of the Wells Gray Provincial Park murders. This was a crazy investigation and one of the worst mass murders of the time.
Remember to follow us on Instagram at sisters.coffee.and.crime and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. This is Christina
and Sandra. Talk soon.